alive with love, are hanging on me, push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what. Is a killing hoes, twisted children are killing foes, poor dumb rednecks rolling low, tired old ladies kissing the dogs. I hate the human love of that stinking mud. I can't use it, trying to make it real compared to what. What it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Half of one doubt, they call it treason. We're chicken feathers all the way out one nut. God damn it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what.
To make it real compared to what. That was a phenomenal, phenomenal anthem of the Vietnam era. That's Les McCann and Eddie Harris with Compared to What. It's a fantastic, fantastic song. You've got to have it. That was taped live at the Montreux Jazz Festival. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Friday, October the 12th, the day after the great debate between the vice presidential candidates, Vice President Joe Biden and Mitt Romney's running mate, Paul Ryan, the congressman from Wisconsin. Well, 90 minutes of something did happen in Danville, Kentucky last night when the two of them squared off, and that's what we are going to be talking about today. Your homework assignment was to watch this debate with a very critical eye. And by critical eye, I mean that we pay, of course, we pay attention to what is said, but we especially pay attention to what is not said. We take a look at all of the verbal and nonverbal signals that we got. We take in the entire panorama of things so that we have a comprehensive analysis. Well, you know, you had the customary super duper minute analysis, I should say, of the whole thing. People just picking apart every shred of this debate. I still say, I mean, compared to what happened, compared to the first debate, at least we had something approximating, you know, a difference of opinion, and we had some kind of a substantive presentation. A long way from a debate, however. I have yet to see a presidential debate. I mean, it's as if within the American society, there's this opposition. People don't know how to debate. All other societies know this. Come on, we are supposed to be a superpower here, and the standards go dramatically low when it comes to the fine art of public speaking. You should be able to deliver at the drop of a hat. You should be able to communicate these ideas as the leaders or would-be leaders of a country. But, you know, we watch these things and I get so frustrated saying, is this the best? Is this the best we could do? Well, yeah, the answer is yes. That's the best we could do. So, dealing with the best that we could do, what do we make of it? What was said? I have some very, very particular observations, but it's not about me today. It's about you today. And that number is 888-874-4888. We want some serious analysis. Now, don't just go, firing buckshot all over the place. Let's get targeted and let's zoom in on a particular idea. I want you to complete your thought, staying the course with your ideas. It's not a thing of where you just spray and whatever lands, wherever it lands. That's not the way we want to talk. We have to have a little bit more discipline. We get ourselves in line with, we have an idea, you present the thesis of your idea, you follow it through, and you support your claim or your view or your opinion, whatever it is. But be a let's see logical development of your thought when you do call. 1-888-874-4888. It is a Friday free-for-all forum, and we are going to be talking about this debate because a lot happened, and it was missed. I've looked at all of the shows where analysis occurs, and they all missed the same thing, and I was astounded by it because, to me, it was so evident. These things that I picked up almost instantly, nobody talked about them. All right. So to give you some incentive, let's go back to Les McCann while you get yourselves together and call 1-888-874-4888. Let's go with Les.
Church on Sunday, sleep and nod, trying to duck the wrath of God. Preachers filling us with fright. They all trying to teach us what they think is right. They really got to be some kind of nut. I can't use it. I'm trying to make it real compared to what.
Les McCann, I tell you, it's a powerful song. You ought to get it. You really ought to get it. I very seldom get this enamored of a piece of music, but this is one of them. This is one of the best of all time. Compared to what? This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are waiting for your phone calls. But I'll start. Now, I have to preface this by saying I'm looking at this debate, which is the second election-related debate, from a particular point of view. And that point of view is as a person of color in the United States. And for the second time, an almost complete omission of anybody that looks like me. It's amazing. And this is why I say, you know, when the Democrats start trying to distinguish themselves from the Republicans and the Republicans try to distinguish themselves from the Democrats, they all agree. Latinos, Asians, African Americans, they're not part of this conversation. Not even visually. You're not there. Your job is to observe real people talking about issues, and you're not one of them. You're not in the circle of influence. You are on the periphery, if you're allowed to be even there. In 2012, the media organizations are saying you're not in it because, I mean, in the United States at a time, this election above all else in recent memory so heavily hinges on the participation of people of color in the United States, the media says no. And that is because in all of this time, the newsrooms of America still have not integrated. They still don't see black people. They still don't see Latinos. They still don't see Asians. They still do not see anybody other than what was pointed out in the Kerner Commission report of 1965, which blamed the media. It cited the media as being the number one, among the number one reasons for the racial bifurcation of America. I mean, we can't see ourselves. This is the land of the candidates are telling us. America is a land of all people. Well, gee, you know, is that true? You really believe that? You're really committed to that, huh? So I turn on the television saying, okay, the first time we were represented by the very guy who heads the nation. That was about the only black person I saw. I said, well, let's try it this time. Let's see what happens. Let's see what the consciousness is. And it is the same. We don't belong. And they make it very clear. And this is one of the unspoken signals. You do not belong here. This is not about you. This is a discussion we are having among ourselves. White America is having this discussion among itself, among themselves, as to the power equation. When it comes to discussing issues of power, that's it. You're out. And if it weren't for the fact that Barack Obama was actually running as the incumbent president, if it weren't for the fact that he himself was, he could not have been omitted from the first discussion, they would have found a way to omit him too. Imagine that. And the Democrats did not raise nobody raised a problem with it. Of course, prior to this election session wherein they were negotiating who was going to ask questions and what was going to go on, that was a toss-up because Univision, the behemoth media organization serving the Latino community, the Hispanic community, as they call it, did raise some objections. The African American Journalists Association did raise some objections. But the status remained decidedly quo. Not even in the audience. As they panned the audience, literally, it was so stark, I could literally tell or count on one hand the number of black faces I saw in an audience. And this is a nationally televised event in which it is supposed to be important by now to communicate awareness that America is not a white world. But that's not what they communicated last night. Again, America is a white world. That's what they communicated, and everybody agrees with it. They all agree. So we look, those people who are like me, people of color, are actually viewing, we are tourists in this experience. We are voyeurs, to be even worse about it. We are looking in on an act of obscenity that says you are not here. If you are here, you are only symbolically here, and it is by permission, our permission, that you are here. And we don't particularly, left to our own devices, we would not invite you in. That's a searing indictment all around, that even at this point, we still cannot get over even the smallest concession to a progressive way of thinking in the United States that is in line with their professed statements of how liberal they are, how much they care about America, how much they identify with multiculturalism. Get lost with that kind of jargon. Harry, you're on the air.
Hi. My take on the election, the first election with Obama against Bush, I know someone personally who campaigned and was paid to campaign for Obama in the first election, and he was really disgusted about all the special interest money that came in, and he saw where things were going even before the election, but he campaigned for him, and he saw that he wasn't going to be doing anything different, really. And then after he got elected, he got into his cabinet, and he wanted to be fired. So what he did was he said at one of the cabinet meetings, not at the cabinet level, but within the cabinet, he said at a meeting, he suggested that they take Cynthia McKinney into the administration. Boom, he was fired instantly for that suggestion. She's a progressive, in my opinion, and a good person. And that got him fired. He was asked to come back into the campaign again this year and campaigning, and he accepted. But the problem is we're in threatened to not have a United States of America, I think, instead of United Corporations of the World. I think there's many indications of that threat, and I think that's what I think. And the problem is,
but Harry, did you watch the debate? What? That was your homework assignment. Did you watch it?
I couldn't get myself to do that because I think that there's no truth in these debates. The people who should be in them, in addition, are not there. And I think that what we need is to go outside the box of two candidates who are giving the illusion that they're different when they're not really different. And unfortunately, you're going to get the same result. I mean, everything that Bush would have done and would have been the whole protest movement stopped, the anti-war movement stopped, because where it wouldn't have if Bush were in office doing the same things that had been done since his being in office. Well, and I knew that was going to happen. I knew that the anti-war movement was going to end without Bush because that's. But the thing is, they're giving the illusion neither of them would be in this position if they were really that different. Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, and many others who should be up there in the debates and would really offer something different, really end the war and things like that, are not. I think it's an issue really of who's in the pocket of the corporations and who's really progressive and would do something really different. And
yeah, but you know, I have problems all the way around because even in the progressive movement, I mean, I'm looking at a debate and I'm trying to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Okay, this is the second round. And looking at it, I am insulted to have to look at this thing because it is saying blatantly, and they all agree, irrespective of their political persuasions, they all agree that this is not an inclusive process. Latinos need not apply. Asians need not apply. African Americans need not apply. Native Americans need not. I mean, they're very clear about that. And so we have to ask ourselves, why would I even respect a process that continues to disrespect people and disrespect me? I take it very personally. It is not that ABC and CBS and NBC, that they don't know that they're part of the role of media is to affirm the rights of all to information. Information is a democratic process, ought to be. It's not that the candidates, they all agree to shut people out. And it is clearly race-based. I don't care what they say. So to me, they all are smeared with the same mud, as far as I'm concerned. And when the debate is over and the discussions part two begin with the analysts, it's a repeat of the same scenario. Information and the discussion of the major issues essentially being almost an all-white affair. I don't get that, and I reject that. And that is one of the things that the progressive movement has got to do. When it sees these things, it ought to be vociferous about it, vociferous in opposition to it. And very much so in the progressive community, they sign on to the same thing. And this is one of the fatal flaws of our country, because by doing so, it says a number of other things that are equally ugly. Thanks, Harry, for your call.
I just want to say I agree with you most.
Oh, sure, sure. Go ahead.
I just want to say one thing. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that there are progressives that are different, but they're not being given the floor, like Cynthia McKinney, like Ralph Nader. I think the real issue, and others, but I think the real problem is if you're not in the pockets of the corporations, you now have debates that I think, you know, they're only having a Democrat and a Republican debate each other, who are accepting corporate money, are becoming super rich in the process.
Yes,
and
but Harry, that's been established. I mean, we're talking about things that have been established. I'm saying, again, it's interesting that you could actually name on your hands. You can actually select people that you know in the so-called progressive movement, which is not what I'm talking about. I talked about yesterday this sin of parallelism. This is not about the individuals. I'm talking as a movement. The progressive movement as a movement has an obligation, a duty, as a movement of people, not as leaders or individuals who, you know, rise a bit higher above the celebrity line than others, but as a movement, it ought to condemn these things as a movement. And therefore, by doing so, establish a standard. We will no longer tolerate racism in any form. And where we find it, we're going to say something about it. We're not going to tolerate it. But as a movement, even the progressives have a high tolerance level for some of these things, which are at the root and which are inextricably linked to almost every single social, economic, and political issue that is being struggled against. The issue is race. And as a movement, it ought to make definitive and declarative statements about these things when they occur. But of course, within the movement, it is an endemic flaw itself. So it hasn't been able to deal with it internally. This is what I mean. When the situation reached its crest in South Africa, the move to divest, movements adopted a unified stance based on the strategy of forcing an end to apartheid. And as a movement, they all signed on to essentially a code of conduct. They all committed and all reinforced on the part of corporations. This is our expectation of your conduct. Whether you agree with us or you don't agree with us is immaterial. This is our expectation of your conduct. And by doing so, you do two things. One, you affirm the integrity of your movement. You affirm a consciousness within your movement. And you send a direct signal to the people that you're fighting against that your standards are very different. And you will compel them, even if they don't want to, you will compel them to behave differently. But as we saw again last night, and probably it will go on for other debates as well, it happens every single day. Congress debates, we're not there. The vast majority of Americans are not represented or even acknowledged symbolically. That's my problem with it. We'll take a break. We'll do some promotions of other great programs right here at PRN.FM. Your calls, again, at 888-874-4888. I know it's a little jarring to hear this, but this is the work we have to do. We got to call it out. We have to let people know that this thing didn't just escape attention. We'll be back right after this.
Slaughterhouses are killing hogs, twisted children are killing frogs, poor dumb rednecks rolling logs, tired old ladies kissing dogs. I hate the human love of that stinking mud. I can't use it, trying to make it real compared to what.
That's the whole point of this, trying to make it real. Don't tell me about all the illusions. Yeah, we know. You have a debate and people are sitting down and one will ask a question of the two others and they'll engage. Yeah, we know how a debate works. But there are many, many things that you look at and you study them because they all are intended to send the same message. They're all intended to send a message. And the message is not just that here is a moment of power that the entire nation is to witness, the entire world is to witness. Now, if you were to fall out of the sky and land on the planet Earth and you say, let me get a snapshot, what is the snapshot that you would get of America based on what was televised as a debate, a national debate to determine the leader of the superpower called the United States? Obviously, it's a white thing. It's a white thing. And the fear is not so much of Iraq or Iran or Syria or Libya. The fear is right here in the United States. The fear of incorporating people on an equal basis in meaningful ways. That's the fear of America. Nothing scares America more than that. And that is why the deliberate effort to exclude, to control, to convey a white supremacist point of view. And that is very troubling, because we are supposed to have the intellectual power by now, the will by now, the commitment by now to dismantle this very nasty thread, to take it out of the fabric of American life. But the journalists community agrees with it. The media could agree with it. The newsrooms of America have not changed significantly since the 1960s, when the Kerner Commission report required or compelled them to examine internally how the newsrooms of America are controlled. The gatekeepers of news, the people who determine what we see and read and hear the way of information, that racial component has not changed. The attitude of America that people of color are to be consigned forever to the periphery. You listen in. We permit you to see how we do it, but you're not in it. And again, I say, if it weren't for the fact that Barack Obama was actually running, this would have been an all-white affair. How repugnant is that? That supersedes, to me, in my view, it supersedes everything being discussed. Just the notion that you could do it. And you don't have to explain it. You don't have to rationalize it. You don't have to do anything. You just do it. Thereby, from a basis of fear, the fear of a truly multicultural society. That's the fear. You want to talk about it, but you're not going to do it. And they all agree. They all agree. That's huge. That is so big a message to convey in this time with an African American president, a biracial president, in a post-racial society, in a society that is a superpower that gets to tell the world how it should live, what it should do, what is the right thing to do, what is the wrong thing to do, what its policies ought to be. And yet we see for the second time, now these are discussions being held, you could call them the public discussions at the highest level concerning the top position of our country. In 2012, it might as well be 1950s. Or the 1860s. And you're going to tell me that they all are, every single analytical show has managed conveniently to miss this point. And yet it is a huge point, bigger than the discussions themselves. 1-888-874-4888. We need to start having some grown-up discussions about this thing, and we need to call it out. We need to call it out. Today, as of yesterday, there should have been a whole bunch of letters. Today should have been, featuring ads, full-page ads in the New York Times, condemning it from all of the progressive communities and this community and that community, from all across the society, saying this is not the America that we want. This pattern of behavior, this conduct, whether by the political world or the media world or the civic world, governmental world, this is not the America we want. Where you symbolically say to people, you are not involved in this conversation. Not only are you not to be seen, you are not to be heard. This is real people taking care of business. You're not in there. You're not in the mix. You get to deal with the aftermath of what is happening here. You get to deal with it post facto. You're not in the facto part. You're in the post part. You can imagine that? Now, I may sound a little perturbed, as I am, and I'm a pretty educated person. Imagine what it says to me. I'm sitting there watching this thing, and I'm saying, well, wait a minute. Is it just me? Am I the only one seeing this? And I'm supposed to now get over the hump of this insult, which is a repeated offense. It happens every single day. But I'm supposed to get over the insult of it and deal now on their terms with what they say the issues are. And in all of the issues discussed, nobody talked about racially divided America. It's other people who are racially divided and ethnically divided. And the Shiites versus, although they call them the Shia, Shiites versus the Sunni, over, you know, all of the fractionalism that they can point to, they never address it. And it is a common thread throughout all of the topics discussed last night. Healthcare. It's not about seniors. They prefer it to be about seniors because the fear factor plays heavily there. The vast majority, everybody knows it. Healthcare is an issue of race in America. The disparities are racially coordinated, racially connected. Poor people, and the vast majority of people in America who are poor happen to be people of color, have had a long history of suffering because of racial disparities in healthcare, jobs. The vast majority of people being squeezed by unemployment. Unemployment in black communities is beyond, in some cases, beyond 80% for teenagers, and the highest rates of adult unemployment is in the African American and Latino communities, Native American communities. They talked about Medicare and entitlements, and we know what they mean. Sure. They decided to say it was about Social Security. But when they say entitlements, we know what entitlements means, and they use the word incorrectly. They lump public assistance, welfare, under entitlements. And they've now distorted the meaning of the word entitlements to include welfare because they don't want to be so overtly racist. So they disguise it as a discussion about the aging Americans who should be concerned about the benefits running out under these truly entitlement programs. Entitlement programs are programs in which you, as a participant, you contribute to the benefits. And there is no means test. But we know when they say entitlements, they're talking about welfare and making a distinguishing difference between those programs to which one contributes and transfer payment programs, which is what public assistance is, third party payment programs. We know what the racial makeup is there. They're talking about foreign policy. We know that there's a huge racial element in that. What is the U.S.'s policy in Africa, in Asia, in the Caribbean? What is that policy? They don't talk about that. That's not even on the map. And they talk about, what is your role as Catholics? How does that inform you, your policy making? How do you see the world because you're a Catholic? Excuse me? But you're concerned about the Arabs and Muslims. So you can make a distinction that Catholics are different. They could be rational. Muslims are just crazy. And the same humanizing force that Catholicism could have on both Ryan and Biden, they both agree, Ryan and Biden, that it does not obtain in the Islamic world. This is the kind of madness that we have. So to sit there and continue this farce, and we're going to see it again. It's going to happen again, and there will be no protest. There will be no record standing that the progressive community has found this to be just completely an offense against America. That this kind of apartheid, informational apartheid, is being practiced in the United States, and that all parties sign on to it. They all participate in it, and they all think it's okay. And it's not. It's not okay. So when you watch these debates, and the analysts are also in there telling you what the reality is, and they don't see it because the status quo is existing in their newsrooms. Nobody of real authority gets to report or analyze what's going on. Nobody African-American or Latino is in charge of deciphering anything or being an expert at anything. They have their people, and you will listen to their people because their people are the ones who are in charge of every single thing. Tom from Hollywood, you're on the line.
Well, I share in your outrage about their exclusion, and it's an actual mission by them because they're afraid that if more have and more a part of this club that they're in, that they may not have what they have now. And so they have to exclude most of us from this process. They have to exclude, I mean, blacks who have the highest incarceration rate in prison, not because they belong there, but because there's a willful decision to get them into prison in these corporately owned prisons. There's a willful decision to make sure that teachers in South Central don't get the same money as teachers in, say, Sherman Oaks out here in California or in Beverly Hills, because they don't want them to have the same education. They want them to have less education. There's a willful decision to exclude the fact that after the 1992 riots, nothing was done to rebuild those communities, and they're basically in the same shape or worse, because these are people that want to hang on to what they have, and they're motivated by fear. And the fear is that if more of us are in their club, then they'll have less than what they have now.
But you know what? Is it not incumbent upon those communities that label themselves liberals or progressive and so forth to say, the time has come to put an end to this nonsense? If you're not going to have an inclusive discussion about the issues of the state, then forget it. Take it off the air.
Listen, I agree with you. I don't understand it myself. After the 2000 election, I went to the African-American A&E Church down in Los Angeles, and I spoke to the reverend there, and I asked him, aren't you outraged that 67,000 blacks were taking off the voting rolls in Florida, and what are you going to do about it? And you know what his answer was? We have to work with the Bush administration to get the money we need in our communities. And that's how they feel. A lot of people feel that they have to work with what's there instead of being outraged and protest against it.
But are you satisfied with the response from the progressive community publicly? I talked yesterday and many times before that about the need to call things out, because this is the work of a movement to put on record that these things that are happening right within our purview to influence. And in fact, we have taken a stand against it. And this is why I'm saying the tragedy is not only that it is occurring, that this exclusionary issue is occurring, but that there is little, if any, formalized opposition to it. And here is a good way for movements that describe themselves as progressive to say, we have a standard, and America should now have a standard that this is not the way to go. We will not accept this kind of programming, which, by the way, and I'm not a lawyer, but I can make a legal case that this violates even the use of the airwaves. If this is considered public affairs programming, if this is what is being utilized by the networks as a way of saying they're reaching to the people of America, but the programming itself is offensively exclusionary, then it violates that.
I would say that's true of entire television and the entire TV. All programs on television are exclusionary. They speak to a certain small audience, and they don't speak to the majority of us. And that's why I maintain that television is not reality.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thanks so much for your comments today. Well, look, I think the point has been driven home, and I get passionate about it because I think it is not up to black people alone to carry the burden, or to Latinos, or to Native Americans, or to whichever group is being immediately affected. The fact is, in a progressive movement, we have to have the maturity to see the link between the denial of rights of any particular group and the impact of all people. This should affect everybody. This should be insulting to say that people in the United States today, 2012, have to witness something that, despite all of the elaborate sets and the proper lighting and the great sound and all the bells and whistles that they have when they do their post-event analysis, all of that masks a fundamental rift, a fundamental flaw. And it is racist. And somebody needs to say it. We do not endorse that. And we will encourage people not to watch these things anymore, not to engage in these kinds of programs anymore, not to support these kinds of things anymore, because it is repugnant. It maintains the very flaw of America that should be eradicated. And it affects everybody. I mean, Tom just talked about an African-American minister who basically conceded, hey, you know, I could tolerate this because in the end, you know, it's the compromise I see that I need to make in order to get some money. And, of course, they very seldom do get any money. But the attitude of compromise is a reflection of the internalization of this power equation. You are continually demeaned, and the message is always sent. You are not part of the central conversation. You're not part of the power equation here. You are on the periphery. You are usually the pathological examples that we point to when we want to illustrate what is wrong with America. We could point to you. You have very good props for that. But in order to incorporate you and to actually legitimize your existence, now we're not prepared to go there. And that is something that we ought to reject utterly. No compromise. Not now. Not if we say we are grown-up America. We can't have that. Everybody gets hurt by that. I want to thank you for your very considered opinions and the contributions that you make to the program. It's great. We're having mature discussions. It's not always easy, but it is important that we engage in these things in a public way, in a public forum, because this is the job, part of the job of getting people ready for whatever the next move is. If we don't see the need to do this, then we missed the point about all the claims that we make to be to being progressive. I don't understand it. I don't. This is why I don't subscribe to labels, because I'm interested in your actions. I'm not interested in whatever label you apply to yourself. Because I know very often people don't understand these labels themselves. And what, in accepting these labels, what you are compelled to do. Progressives are compelled to take a position. And that's what we ought to do. That's what ought to be done. Never, ever allow these things to happen insofar as you could influence them. And we can. You can always reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And it is a joy to be here to connect with you. Stay tuned on PRN.FM. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. Thanks again for listening.
Trying to make it real compared to what suck you to me.